Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network, in association with Mueller, She Wrote Media. I'm your host, Kimberly Johnson in D.C. Today, my returning guest is Allison Gill of Mueller, She Wrote and the Daily Beans podcast. We have a lot to discuss, a lot to fit in. So before we get into it, the Start Me Up podcast is independent, supported by listeners, and it's woman run. A great big thank you to everybody who supports the show. If you enjoy today's podcast, visit patreon.com/startmeup. Check out all the tiers. I do include a tier with a much shorter intro and no ads. You can hear the free shows on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and they're followed up by What's Up, a show just for patrons where I talk about anything that comes to mind. It's a little more personal, kind of like my online diary. Visit patreon.com/startmeup. And don't forget, you can find Start Me Up on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever podcasts are found. Now please enjoy my conversation with Allison Gill. Welcome back to the show, Allison.
Oh, hello. Thank you so much. How are you, Kimberly?
I'm okay. And now I want to sing the song Allison, except that no one else wants me to do that. How often do people sing that song to you?
All the time.
I'm and sure.
I believe your aim is true. So.
Well, I do not have a good singing voice, so nobody. I mean, every once in a while when I'm on Bob Suska's after party, he'll play something. And I may sing along a little bit, but, you know, that's all I'll do. All right. So I just want to jump right in because so much fucking shit is going on and there's a whole bunch of stuff I want to talk to you about. So first I'm going to start off with, and I want to get into the 1/6 thing, but first we have to start off in Russia because the other day I posted something and you replied and I just want to get into it. So first of all, Macron says that there's dark days coming for Ukraine after he spoke with Putin. And so, the other day I tweeted something and I think it was like, you know, we're all watching, the whole world is watching Russia beat up on Ukraine, kill people, destroy the country, and we're all just watching. And I feel that that's morally wrong. Now, on the other hand, I understand getting involved very, you know, it would mean World War III. And do I want World War III? Although some people are calling it World War III right now. They're not a part of NATO. So I get why. I totally understand everything that's at stake. But yet, morally, I struggle with this problem. Well, I mean, I think today there was reports coming out that Putin is going to start doing assassinations and public executions. So yeah. What are your thoughts on all of this?
Yeah, I'm with you. I wish... My thought is, why not do more? Why not... you know, secure a no-fly zone, mm-hmm. send in, you know, some fighters, some you know, top guns, mm-hmm. To just bomb the shit out of that convoy or whatever. Because, like, everyone's like, well, that's technically, you know, that's crossing the line where we're engaging with Russia, mm-hmm. and then we're, mm-hmm. you know. And but, you know, my thought there is, but, you know, he's not really a rule follower,
right?
not exactly like, well, I'm gonna leave United States alone because they haven't technically engaged me yet.
Right. Yeah.
we've helped lead the world with just absolute decimating sanctions. I mean they're, you know, he won't even open the stock market because he knows what's gonna happen.
Yeah.
We've cut him off from his $630 billion war chest, his rainy day. He can't access that. No jets can come to the U.S. airspace. Like, all the crippling sanctions, and mm-hmm. they're expanding them to include a lot of different oligarchs and Putin himself. Like, he's sitting there saying, well, I'll just leave them alone until they actually fire up shot at me. Mm-hmm. I don't know that that's in his mind. He mm-hmm. seems... You know, he called for to put his nuclear, you know, I guess, people on alert or whatever. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Why do you think he would not engage us? Mm-hmm. We have troops over there. We have like 8,000, 10,000 troops over there. Mm-hmm. Is he really like holding off because of the rules of war tell him not to, or... You know, so I'm kind of with you. Like, I'm like, why aren't we, like, I said the other day, like, wait a minute. Why don't we go in?
Allison telling war jokes.
I have to laugh or I'll cry.
Because I know.
Watching the resolve of the Ukrainian people, mm-hmm. and just feeling there's nothing you can do, and they're just sitting ducks, and mm-hmm. there's so much. And he's using weapons that are against the Geneva Convention, again, mm-hmm. just breaking rules, committing war crimes.
Yeah. And then there's also, you know, okay, stay away from me. I'm going to nuke you if you get in the way. Okay, well then, he's going to say the same thing the next time and the next time. I mean, I don't know, you know, there's talk that he, you know, Rachel Maddow was even saying that people who know him are basically thinking that he's lost his marbles. And, uh-huh. you know, so there's that. We don't know what's going to happen with him. I mean, is he going to Hitler out on us? Is he going to go to a bunker and kill himself? I don't know. I think really, I mean, unfortunately, as long as the United States chooses not to step in outside of imposing sanctions and the other things we're doing to help, honestly, I think the best case scenario would be for the Russians to overthrow mm-hmm. him, or the oligarchs to turn on him. There's that one oligarch who put a measly $1 million bounty on his head. I mean, $1 million, really? But I don't know. I mean, what do you... okay, that's the other thing I want to ask you about, too, is because it seems to me, like, I saw this woman today. She was posting about going over to Etsy, like, for Etsy, for people in Russia, and commenting on whatever it is they are selling and say, hey, this thing is really nice, but then going into this whole long thing about the truth of Russia and Putin and Ukraine to let average citizens kind of know what's going on and what the world is thinking about them. And, you know, I saw the other night on MSNBC, somebody, whoever it was saying the young people in Russia are getting their news from the internet, which I'm sure is monitored, and they only get a portion of, you know, of what's available. I don't exactly know in Russia how it works, but the young people are on the internet getting their news, and older people, it's just like here watching Fox News. The older people are watching mm-hmm. Russian television and getting misinformation. But the ruble is like crashed, and that's affecting older people. And so I think some of these older people are going to start waking up and realizing, oh, wait a minute, this is we're getting fucked over again. And if the young people can recognize, and they have relatives and friends who live in Ukraine and understand that it's a democracy, they understand that they are in this unique position right now where they could all stand up. And I don't know how it would fucking work, because I'm just a podcaster and I don't have all the answers. But the idea that the country could like really stand up against this autocracy and oligarchy. Do you think that there's a chance that that's even going to happen?
Yeah, I think that that's the best way to end this, mm-hmm. Or the most, not the best, but mm-hmm. the probably most likely way that it would end.
Okay.
Because, like you said, with these sanctions against the oligarchs, the guy has to sell the Chelsea football team. And that's a couple $1 billion. They're going to start turning on Putin, and some of them are already turning up suicided.
Really? I didn't know that. Interesting.
Another one today who was found dead. And so the fact that, and you know, we don't have any proof that Putin had these people murdered, mm-hmm. but my suspicions are high. Shit, we're either going to get killed or, you know, we got to, you know, get rid of, you know, it's got to be from within, right? Mm-hmm. It has to be from within, because if unless they go into some NATO airspace mm-hmm. or start shooting at NATO soldiers or NATO forces,
we can't, you know, we're not going to do it.
Yeah. Article 5, and regardless of how we feel about it, I don't think Biden's going to engage.
You mean Biden's not going to look at my tweets? He's not going to base his foreign policy stuff on my tweets? Are you fucking kidding me? I get it. You know, I get it. I understand. But I just feel like, you know, he is our Hitler. And I mean, he's not our Hitler yet. He's Ukraine's Hitler, but he's the world's Hitler again. We've got another madman who's just going nutso. And I just feel like we cannot allow. I mean, oh my God, for all these years, Donald Trump, I mean, we had to kind of let him get away with what he got away with because the Republicans refused to hold him accountable. And the Democrats only had so much power, you know, after the midterms, they got a little more power and they were able to impeach him, but they weren't able to do much else. And so we've been watching for so long people with power fucking everything up and just like, we're just watching. And now
I think people don't realize that the reason that Putin was able to hold on to power for 22 years is because he successfully pulled off the kind of shit that Trump tried to pull off last right. year on January 6th.
Yeah. Wow. That's a really good point.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I think... Now, the other thing I want to ask you about this is that I do see some people, talking heads, pundits, etc., mentioning they think this is going to be like a years-long war. I can't even imagine. I mean, I don't think Putin's going to have the money to keep going for years. I don't know what the outcome is going to be. Hopefully, like you said, likely scenario or hopeful scenario where they overthrow him. But, I mean, I don't know who would be replacing him, and I don't know where the country would go, but it would be so great if we could get to some kind of Russian version of democracy.
Get overthrow Putin, get Navalny out of jail, and put him in charge.
Yes, yes.
Become a democracy. Have your, you know...
That would be awesome. But, I mean, will they do that? I don't know. But, I mean, providing that... I mean, like I said... Russia doesn't seem like it's capable right now of years and years and years and years of war. Do you have any kind of like gut feeling how long this thing might go on?
No. With the crippling sanctions the way they are and mm-hmm. the oligarchs squeezed, it's longer than it should.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For the Ukrainian people.
Right.
But again, I'm with you. I don't know the solution here. My gut feeling is to just go in and fucking annihilate him.
Yeah.
Now, because he's not going to stop at Ukraine.
No,
if
he's not.
Ukraine is going to go for NATO. And so.
And he's going to threaten nuclear weapons.
Yeah, I think he's going to do that regardless.
Yeah.
Of whether a shot is fired from us or not.
Yeah.
Can we put some of our pilots in some MiG-29s and, you know, disguise ourselves and go there and fuck shit up? I'm trying to think of, there's got to be
something.
But it's important for us to follow the rules, right?
Yeah.
Because if we break the rules that, you know, it's kind of like what's going on at home with the Department of Justice. Everybody wants end runs around mm-hmm. process and, you know, lock them all up now and mm-hmm. fuck bail and don't think about criminals' rights, defendants' rights mm-hmm. and the Constitution. And it's like, look, we can't fight for democracy while fucking democracy. It's the same with the Geneva Convention. We got to follow these rules
mm-hmm.
or what good are they? I mean, if we're the superpower in the world and we skirt those rules. So it's a
conundrum.
Very scenario, and I wish Ukraine was part of NATO. I don't understand why they're not.
I know. It's so incredibly frustrating. And then, you know, I mean, everybody loves Ukraine now. Everybody loves Zelensky, and for good reason. And to watch, you know, I'm just hoping that what's going on over there is getting to these people who choose not to vote in this country, and that they have an understanding. I mean, it's a lot. It's a big fucking ask. I know. But it's like, understand what we're up against. Fucking whether it's Donald Trump or DeSantis, they may not behave exactly like Putin, at least not right away, but give DeSantis some time. I think Trump would. But these people in this country who don't vote need to realize this is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with, you know, it's autocracy versus democracy. And I don't know. I know people are paying attention, and I know that the world is aware of what's going on, but you know, the voters in this country are not really informed. They're not engaged, but I'm just hoping that this is going to be something that wakes everybody up, because, and then on top of it, in, I guess, starting in April, we're going to have these 1-6 hearings, which leads me to this next question. And this, okay, so there's new news today. Scott McFarlane comes out in a tweet and says, in a new legal filing, the House Select January 6th Committee says, the Select Committee also has good faith basis for concluding that President and members of his campaign engaged in a criminal conspiracy to defraud the United States. And then Robert Costa said that he just spoke to Kinzinger about the committee's latest filing, and so I guess Kinzinger said, in terms of anything beyond that, for a criminal perspective, that's up to the DOJ and not us. Okay, so we all know that I think anybody listening to this show knows where you stand on Garland. and I'm pretty much with you. I mean, sometimes I get impatient, but like you said, there are certain rules that have to be followed, and sometimes I just express myself with my impatience, but it's not that I expect, again, Garland to be reading my tweets and going, oh my God, Kimberly's saying something, and I have to go do it.
But, you know, if you think about it this way, Barb McQuaid last week wrote a 27-page mock charging document for Just Security about publicly available evidence and information that shows that charges could be brought against Trump. This is before the filing, right? Obviously, the filing came last night. Mm-hmm. This is Barb McQuaid last week, and I had her on the Daily Beans to talk about it. And she says there are two charges, and that's 18 U.S. Code 371 and 18 U.S. Code 1512C2. And lo and behold, those are the two charges that the January 6th committee, and mind you, they're filing this to put down the argument that John Eastman's email communications from Chapman University are attorney-client privilege. Mm-hmm. They aren't filing this for arrests, right? They're just saying, hey, here's why his emails aren't protected by attorney-client privilege. It's because of the crime fraud exception, and we find these two crimes happened. Mm-hmm. And that's conspiracy to defraud the United States and obstructing official proceeding. And so it's exactly the way that Barb McQuaid laid it out. So while the DOJ and the 1-6 committee might not pick up our tweets, because I've been tweeting about 1512C2 for months... they might listen to Barb McQuaid. You know,
right,
kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
And they have some incredible prosecutors working with them, former federal prosecutors as, you know, House counsel. They have a huge team of actual criminal prosecutors working on this. So the question for Kinzinger shouldn't be, you know, what's going to come of this. The question should be, did you make a criminal referral to the Department of Justice?
Interesting.
Or are you going to?
Right. I would assume that, they would.
Do they really need to? Because the Department of Justice can act on these public filings. Yeah. But again, as I've said, and I don't necessarily agree that this is the right way to do it, but Merrick Garland may be waiting for either a referral from the Inspector General of the Department of Justice, because that is a nonpartisan entity, or the bipartisan Congressional 1-6 Select Committee to make a referral to him so that he can say, this wasn't politically motivated. I took a recommendation and a referral from a nonpartisan or bipartisan entity and simply investigated based on that referral, and that thereby keeping it at arm's length that it's any kind of a political witch hunt. Now, of course, the Republicans are going to say that anyway, but when you're trying to prove it in court and in front of a jury, it can make a difference.
Yeah, you know what? We're going to talk a little more about this in just a second, but we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Hey there, it's Kimberly. If you'd like to support the Start Me Up podcast, just visit patreon.com/startmeup. You'll see all the different tiers. You can make your choice and you will have my undying gratitude. Thank you so much. Okay, we're back. So, are you pretty much still feeling the same way you feel about Garland? It's just like, let him do his thing?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a year, right?
Yeah.
And like there are, you know, school administration test cheating scandals that take 2.5 years to investigate. And so I'm like, it's only been a year. My main complaint is, first of all, if he is waiting for a referral, I'm like, that's, you don't have to do that, bro.
Right.
but the good news is if he is waiting for a referral, the investigative work will be mostly done and it wouldn't take long. To make a charging decision, not to charge him, but to make a charging decision. But my main complaint, and I've talked about this with Pete Strzok, for example, who was the head FBI agent on the Mueller investigation and also the head FBI agent on the Hillary Clinton email investigation. And he said, the thing that is really missing for me is the sense of urgency from the department. You know, they come out and announce, we've got a klepto capture unit. We've got a, this unit. We've got this new unit that's going to look after school boards. We got this thing going on. We're putting resources on this. And it's like, well, what are you doing about the January 6th thing? You don't have to tell me that you're investigating. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what resources are you putting behind this and how urgent is this? That has not been expressed, I think, from the department. And I think that that's what people, what's frustrating people, because when, you know, the DOJ by design is quiet and slow. Mm-hmm. And that is a bad recipe for public opinion.
Yes.
and it is frustrating because this is so fucking urgent as mm-hmm. we see what autocracies do abroad. Mm-hmm. We have to stop it here. And accountability is the way to do that. One of the ways. It's not the only way. I don't mm-hmm. want everyone to think that, that all of our problems will go away if Donald Trump is arrested. They won't.
No, they won't.
So again, it's very frustrating, and I understand that, and I share in that frustration. Mm-hmm. But I'm waiting to see. I mean, if he decides not to do anything, then I'll be fucking pissed.
Yeah, I know, and I mean, I can't imagine. I literally can't imagine that you have this 1-6 committee saying, "Okay, we have found criminal activity, and big time criminal activity," and Garland just, I it's hard for me to imagine, and it's like I see people on Twitter and they'll go, he's gonna do nothing. Okay, stop with that shit. I mean, I don't think he's gonna do nothing. I don't know what he's gonna do. None of us know exactly what he's gonna do. But it just seems to me, I think that, you know, he made it very clear in his speech last month that he was gonna start from the bottom and that everybody involved was, you know, they were gonna pay attention to everybody. I'm going to take him at his word for that. And just like you said, it's only been a year. So there, like, very well may be that we see in 2023 would see an indictment on Donald Trump or somebody high up. So I'm just, you know, it is frustrating. And like you said, public opinion makes it hard because every single day that goes by and we're being bombarded by just these fucking endlessly stressful events. Now it's Vladimir Putin attacking this poor country. And it's so much to ask of us, but all of us have to, I think, we just have to remember everything that you just said and kind of calm the fuck down and let things happen.
And the timelines are apparent to me, having been through the Mueller investigation, having studied Watergate. You know, I put out a tweet last September. I was like, hey, is anybody connecting this Eastman letter with this Jeffrey Clark fellow? That seems like a conspiracy. That seems like a conspiracy. Mm-hmm. That's 6 months ago.
And look at today,
It took to get the indictments out, to get investigative results from the Mueller investigation mm-hmm. on Manafort Gates. And then also in September is when we found out that Sidney Powell was being subpoenaed and investigated for her participation in January 6th by the Department of Justice at the U.S. Attorney's Office in D.C. And I said 6 months. That's how long it could take before we see any movement on that. And that's going to be later this month, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If the timelines hold up. So things are actually going along timelines of similar sorts of criminal conspiracies that we've seen. But we just have nothing to compare this to. We can't say, well, the last failed attempted coup by an autocrat took a year and 9 months. You know, we don't have anything to compare it to. And so being in the dark is what is the most frustrating. And I think actually traumatic for a lot of people.
It is. It's very traumatic. And I mean, I've noticed that myself just in the last couple of weeks. I've been having, it was prior to Russia invading Ukraine. Just, you know, these feelings, and I know there are other people out there feeling what I am in their own way, but it's like up and down, up and down, up and down. And, you know, there were a couple of days where I just couldn't even fucking deal with looking at Twitter or looking at the news, and I was just going through my, you know, my photo albums and posting pictures, you know, from yesteryear and kind of just like stepping out of this because it's so much. And I saw also some guy tweeted, like, can I just turn this hell sign on and see something that doesn't enrage me? And I think right now that's kind of impossible. It's impossible to turn on social media, even if you're just following people that you trust and you know are legitimate. There's so much that's happening, and we're all collectively being traumatized. And I think, you know, it's really important to do whatever you can to kind of pull yourself out of it for a while, because it's so overwhelming. And the other overwhelming thing I want to ask you about, and you know what, I haven't talked about this at all, and so I do really, really want to know what you have to say. As far as those two prosecutors resigning in the Bragg prosecutors. Now, I guess Bragg is supposedly saying that there's really nothing there, that he doesn't think there's going to be enough to, I guess, come, you know, get to an indictment or get to any kind of prosecution as far as Donald Trump is concerned with that DA investigation. What do you think is going on there? I mean, some people think that those two prosecutors were purchased or something.
No, those two prosecutors were badass, and they were the ones who did all the work and ran the grand jury and were ready to indict. They just needed to get a couple more people into the grand jury, and apparently they weren't, but Bragg wasn't reading their memos or taking meetings with them about it. And if Bragg, and this of course is alleged and not proven, but if mm-hmm. Bragg's, I don't think I'm going to go after Donald Trump, after being there for a month and a half, mm-hmm. you know, telling lawyers who'd been doing this for over 2 years, that is very frustrating. The thing is though, and I've heard reports that there are resignation letters and they're not being released. I would like to see those, and I would also like to hear from Dunn and Pomerantz, the two men that resigned, because you don't just resign unless either it's just the investigation's over mm-hmm. and you're like, well, we couldn't find anything, here's our declination, here's why we just decided not to prosecute, have a good day, we're going back to our private practices, or you're pissed mm-hmm. And so, you know, all reporting indicates that they're pissed. But here's the thing that I don't get. I have a theory. Why isn't Donald Trump grabbing onto that and bragging about it? Look, they couldn't find anything on me, so they're resigning.
Yeah,
that is something that he would, by all other accounts, in any normal world for him at least, would be something that he would latch on to and talk about, but he hasn't. And I think the reason is because that's his defense in the New York Attorney General civil case. He's trying to argue, hey, I've got a criminal case going on over here, mm-hmm. and so you're trying to make a civil case into a criminal case and use what you are going to get from my depositions that we're about to be compelled to make in a criminal case, and that's not fair. Now, of course, the judge said that's totally fucking fair. You can plead the fifth, that's your right, and it can't be used against you in a criminal case, but it can be used against you in the civil case. And then that's why the judge said you can't use it as a sword and a shield, the Fifth Amendment. Mm-hmm. But if there's no more criminal case, that is Donald Trump's entire defense for not having to be deposed by the civil case in the New York Attorney General's office. So I think he's keeping quiet about that. Like, no, it's still going full bore. Right. They're after me. Yeah. They're attacking me. And this could be used against me. This civil case could be used against me criminally, and that's unconstitutional. It's not. Right. But it's his only defense. It's a shitty defense, but it's his only defense. And I think that's why he hasn't glommed onto that little bit of news yet.
So then why is Bragg so, I don't even know what the word is. I mean, I'm seeing here in, Jane Meyer wrote in the New Yorker that he was slow to meet with the prosecutors. He seemed disinterested in the probe. He acted disengaged and distracted. What's the fucking deal with him?
When he put out his memo, his hot memo, when he first got there, he got a lot of blowback for it. And so I think he's politically afraid. That's what I think, and that's just a guess. You know? But I really, really, really want to hear from Dunn and Pomerantz. Yeah. I want to see their resignation letters. I want to know why they left.
That's so incredibly frustrating, because it seems to me, I mean, obviously we've got a huge case in Georgia where he was on the phone, you know, demanding those 11,000 votes be found. That's a pretty big fucking deal. But I think everybody was looking at this particular case in the DA because it was a criminal case having to do with his business, his finances, and we always hear that it's mobsters are taken down because of money, not because they went out and killed somebody. And so uh-huh. How discouraged are you with this information?
That they might go down for money and not for the coup?
No. Let me just rephrase that. With Dunn and Pomerantz leaving, I mean, one of the articles that I found, and again, I hadn't been following or even talking about this, so I don't know too much. I only know what I just read. And then I think it might have been the New Yorker's article that said why this particular investigation is basically dead now. So, is it dead? Is it just going to go away?
Well, the person that Bragg elevated to run that team of 25 lawyers in the Manhattan DA's office to take the place of Dunn and Pomerantz is actually a really, really good, talented, fair-minded person. But I also thought that about Bragg.
Yeah.
So, this is just a situation where I'm going to have to wait and see. Unfortunately, I call it tantric justice, Kimberly.
That's perfect. Oh my god.
It's like they're fucking edging us.
Oh,
you know?
Oh my god, that is fucking funny. I mean, you gotta laugh, right? Oh my god. Well, I guess we're all just gonna fucking wait and see. It does seem though that as April approaches and we're gonna be seeing these, public hearings, I think, also with the escalation in Russia, and God only knows how the Republicans are going to be behaving every day. They just get more and more crazy. And, with Marjorie three names and Boebert screaming like monkeys at the State of the Union, the behavior of them, I'm truly, truly just hoping that this builds up reason for American people to say, oh, my God, we don't want this shit in the midterms. I'm just hopeful. And then the last thing I want to talk about.
One thing, because you brought up a point earlier about people who don't vote.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I see a lot of people on social media, fuck Pelosi, why isn't she expelling Boebert and Green? I can't believe she's just doing nothing. Mm-hmm. And my response is, look, Nancy Pelosi can't expel Boebert and Green without a two-thirds vote. And the reason we don't have two-thirds in the House is because 120 million Americans stayed home.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're able to vote, I have to add that caveat because a lot of people vote suppressed.
Yeah.
If you're able to vote and you don't, it's your fault.
Yep.
Not Pelosi's, not Biden's, not mine, mm-hmm. not the progressives, not the squads, not mm-hmm. the moderates, not Mansions or Sinemas. It's mm-hmm. your fucking fault.
Yes. 100%. Yeah. I wrote a book about the importance of voting. And basically, I wrote it for myself as a young woman who was just not politically engaged. I was fortunate enough to have a mother who was extremely politically engaged, and I did start voting at a young age. And basically, I would just ask her, who are you voting for? And I would follow that. I wasn't following politics. So at least I was putting out, my mom's very, very democratic, progressive without being annoying, and, just wants good for people. So anyway, but I was not paying attention to it. And, and I know the one thing I will say, though, and I can't speak for everybody, but when I was younger, the things that would have grabbed my attention were things like this. Big, big, big deal shit, sensationalistic shit. That's always what got my attention. I remember watching Shock and Awe and the Gulf Wars on television, and any time and Russia would be absolutely be taking my attention. I think I would have also started paying attention because of all the abortion laws, but that's just me. So, people need to vote. And if they don't vote and if they're able to vote and they choose not to, then it is 100% on them.
And our message should be, if you don't vote, that's a vote for Putin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. I'm going to steal that from you. Or you can tweet it out and I'll retweet it. But that's so fucking true. Mm-hmm. And just to end this on somewhat of a positive note, fingers crossed, let's hope. It does seem like the COVID situation is easing up a little bit. I know that there was talk of, what was it, the stealth Omicron variant. And we've been hearing about it a little, but I haven't been hearing enough about it to start feeling worried. And I've been checking within my county, and for the longest, I think back in January, the numbers were in the thousands of people, of cases, not deaths, but cases in my county. I think it was the worst was maybe 3,400. Today, and for the past few days, it's been around 67. So uh-huh. I'm figuring that, even though in, I think it was January or maybe February of last year, prior to vaccinations, we were around this number, maybe into March, but still, this time around, we're vaccinated and boosted, at least the ones who are, have that extra protection. And I know vaccines start to wane after about 4 months. But I think with the lower cases and I know you got it. Oh, my God. Do you have any after effects from it?
No, good. None.
Good. Hopefully you never will. But, I mean, I think that's hopeful. And, you know, Biden talked about it in the State of the Union, and he was saying how, you know, you can go get tested, and at the testing site, if you test positive, you will automatically be given an antiviral pill. So we're getting a hold on this, and I don't know about you, but, I mean, and you've gotten it, so you've got a little bit of layer of protection on top of what you, you know, of your vaccinations. So for a while, you're okay, I think. You could just, like, go out, like, start kissing strangers, and you'd probably be okay. But, I mean, are you feeling this, like, hopeful thing? Do you think we're out of the woods?
I think it's going to be waves. I think this is the endemic. I think we're going to have months of okay times, and then we're going to have months of not okay times. Mm-hmm. And I think it'll be like the, you know, like the flu, where you're going to need to keep getting boosters until maybe about 2 or 3 years in, and then you'll be able to just get like a flu shot, but for COVID.
Right.
And it'll chill out a little bit after it's, you know, run its mutation chains. Mm-hmm. But again, I know I sound like I should know what I'm talking about because I'm public health and epidemiology, but that's kind of how it's all conjecture, but that's how I see this going. And from all of the people in the medical field that I've worked with for over a decade, that's kind of what they seem like they're saying. So enjoy the times when we have low cases, and when we don't, get the fuck inside. Now, I don't have kids, so I'm speaking as someone who doesn't have kids. Mm-hmm. I can't even imagine what it's like to have somebody under 5 right now my house.
Yeah, I'm so fucking grateful. I am so grateful. I mean, I've got a 7-year-old niece. She's been vaccinated, but of course there's still the fear that, you know, she goes to school and gets it and brings it home. So, you know, it's like you're saying, and I think, Fauci wrote something not too long ago, kind of saying what you were saying, we're heading into the endemic phase of this. And yeah, it's just, it's going to be about shots, yearly shots. And, you know, we're just going to see more of it in the wintertime, I'm going to assume. And that's just the way it's going to be. But it does look like it's getting to a point now where it's manageable and we're not all so stuck. And, you know, I'm seeing people all over social media, and whether or not I would do it, but I'm seeing people going out and being with other people. And like yesterday, I went to the grocery store because that's what I do on Wednesdays, and nobody, there's no longer a mask mandate. But I would say probably about 75% of the people that I saw were still wearing masks. So I imagine as the time goes by, we'll see less masks, but we're also going to be seeing less cases. So that's a good thing. So that's where we're going to end this on the good positive news of the day. So, you know, fuck you, COVID. And finally, the worst of you hopefully is over. And, you know, I just adore you, Allison. I love talking to you. And I'm so grateful that you had the time to speak, because the other night when we were doing Twitter, I'm like, oh, my God, I have to talk to her. So I need to talk to her about this on my show. So I'm so grateful you are available. And of course, like every other show, tell everybody where they're going to find you.
Oh, everywhere you get your podcasts except Spotify. It's the Daily Beans Pod is our weekday news with swearing. It comes out every weekday morning. And then, of course, I've got Cleanup on Aisle 45 coming out on Wednesdays. And I've got the MSW Book Club and Mueller, She Wrote on Sundays. And you can follow me on Twitter at Mueller, She Wrote. Or if you want to get more personal, I'm at Allison Gill. 2 L's in Allison, 2 L's in Gill.
Awesome. So much going on for you. You can find my books on Amazon. I'm author Kimberly, L-E-Y on Twitter. Thank you, Allison, so much. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Wonderful to speak to you, too.
Take care.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.